Pete Rose logged more hits in baseball history than anyone else. No one has come close to breaking his record. But he was also at the center of one of the game's biggest scandals, a scandal that changed baseball forever. In the new book, Charlie Hustle, New York Times bestselling author Keith O'Brien chronicles Pete Rose's spectacular rise and fall. Drawing on firsthand interviews with Rose himself and his associates, this is Pete Rose as we've never seen him before. By Charlie Hustle, available wherever books are sold.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like pro wrestling? Well, we like pro wrestling too. It's Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins, joined as always by Chris Novembrino. Chris, how's it going?
Oh, they call me Mr. Honey is what they call me, Jeff Hawkins, because I am so sweet.
Yes, we were having an off-air discussion about Monica Honey or Manuka Honey.
Monica Honey is a soon debuting gimmick. Yeah. No, she'll be debuting in NXT in a couple of weeks here.
Oh, speaking of medicine, I am blessed to have really good health insurance through my employer now. It used to be I had like cheap health insurance through my employer, but now I have good health insurance. So take this with a grain of salt. Like, but if you don't have insurance in Los Angeles, you go to a clinic in and out or emergency room and you get what you need. If you have insurance, you have to go to doctor's offices. And every doctor's office here, I'm pretty sure it's probably the same where you are, but you sign an agreement that says, and if I have to cancel at the last minute, I have to pay $25 to $75. Or something for the inconvenience. Well, Chris, I have a doctor's appointment yesterday. I am in my car on the way to the appointment. Ring. Oh, hey, Mr. Hawkins. Wanted to tell you that the doctor isn't in the office right now. We should have told you this yesterday.
So will you be getting $75?
And I said, send me a check for $50, and they hung up on me. The other gimmick they do, and I'm not sure if this is everywhere else, but it is prevalent here in Southern California, is the doctor does a circuit. He does like one day in one office, one day in another office in Southern California, like way in another section of Southern California, does one day in another one, and then goes to his home base to do procedures and things. And it feels like a grift because I have to go see a specialist for a procedure that older men need to get done to make sure it's preventative. And he goes, yeah. And I was ready for it. You know, I was ready. You know, okay, what do we need to do here? Blah, blah, blah. Didn't eat all day. Expected to do this. No, it was just a consult. And, you have to drive 50 miles inland in California to come to my office to have this done. Oh, and you also have to have somebody come with you because we're going to put you under anesthesia and you can't drive home alone. And I'm like, well, okay. So how does one do this if one doesn't have family or friends out here?
Uber, I guess. But
no,
50
you
miles.
Can't ride share. The person you have to have somebody waiting in the room for you.
So oh my God.
So there's the wonders of the internet are, I think I'm going to hire somebody to pretend to be my friend for the day. I think that's the route I'm going. And it's like, oh, you can hire this person to run errands for you. And he has a good car. I'm like, okay, have him run errands for me for half a day, but the errand's going to be running me to this doctor's appointment and then running me back home. Because I thought about doing the drive to like a nearby shopping center and then Ubering over to the place. But it's like, you're under anesthesia. You have to have somebody with you. in order to do it. And they have like medical chaperones, but those are crazy expensive.
Right. Because that's like a trained professional. And you don't actually need a trained professional.
No,
you need
I
someone to feign giving a crap about you
yes.
and walking you out the door.
And I have people that can feign giving a crap about me. It's just
you can find a hobo who will do that.
Not enough to drive me out there necessarily, because it's like, you know, gas is expensive. So that's the main. Oh, wait, you want me to drive all the way from the South Bay to the Valley to then drive you to Thousand Oaks? Are you crazy? It's those kinds of conversations I'm currently having. So yeah, it's I know it's first world problems, but I'm just like, why doesn't he have an office in Burbank where he can just stick the thing up my butt and go? Okay. Anyway, Chris has no response for that.
You were initially keeping the procedure private, yeah, and then you were like, and then you were like, it's my prostate.
No, it's colonoscopy.
Oh, okay. Even better.
It's much more fun and far more action than I've gotten in a while. Anyways, on to the wrestling news. Top story. Roman Reigns has signed a new contract with the WWE. Exact schedule and details aren't clear, but he will work television dates, but not every week. May not be doing house shows much longer, or if so, very limited. And he won't be on every pay-per-view show. It looks like he got the Brock deal. There was a report earlier that he had agreed to only do the major pay-per-view shows per year, meaning largely the planned stadium shows in Saudi Arabia. One person in the promotion, this is the Wrestling Observer writing, with knowledge of the deal, said the first report of 6 pay-per-views wasn't exactly accurate, but close. And this year, the number of stadium shows and Saudi Arabia shows would be 8. On the May 7th house show in Trenton, New Jersey, he said that this might be the last time he wrestles in Trenton and is going through a new phase in life. After the WrestleMania Backlash pay-per-view, he teased that it might be the last time he teams with his cousins, the Usos, in a 6-man tag. He has been pulled from Hell in the Cell advertising for June 5th. Reigns was also pulled from the advertising from numerous house shows and everything after the June 24th SmackDown tapings in Austin, Texas. Other than the July 2nd Money in the Bank show in Las Vegas, the July 30th SummerSlam show, and the 9-3 Principality Stadium in Cardiff, Wales show, he has been pulled from all that advertising. Nick Khan has also said recently that the company was looking at helping Reigns in his acting career. I hope that means getting him lessons, to be honest with you, but that's me being snide because I've watched him act before. But looks like Roman Reigns got the bag and he got the special deal and he's going to have time off with his family. And he's going to be able to get any medical procedures he needs dealing with treating leukemia. Should that come back? It's good to be the king, Chris.
Yeah. And I mean, we've been seeing this Roman slowdown here quietly over.
And we're not just talking about the entrance to the ring.
No, not just the entrance to the ring. And honestly, even sort of like a change in the work rate here. There was a point where this guy was doing things like crucifix bombs and stuff. And those days are very much over.
Yes, now we have spear and we have Superman punch.
Yeah, it's a very limited moveset we've been getting from old Roman Reigns here for quite a while. It's interesting to see him sort of make this official. I've been thinking about this week, and I've been kind of going back and forth on like how sold I am on this take, but I'm gonna at least throw it out there. Given that I just like looked at the US coronavirus cases, I wonder if Roman's thinking with his current health status that it's been a really good run. And that, you know, maybe initially here he thought, as many did, that there would be like a clear finish line to COVID-19. And it doesn't necessarily look like there's going to be a clear finish line to COVID-19, or, you know, there might be a COVID, another iteration of it that's not 19 at that in the future here. That like this might be just the way things are. And Roman's made a lot of money. He has health conditions he has to take seriously, as you mentioned before here, and maybe working a more limited schedule where he's limiting exposure to the public behooves him at his present stage of life.
I won't go that far because I think this is all about making Roman a special attraction.
And I don't think he's there though.
I don't either, but here's the thing. Hashtag.
This isn't even like trying to make Randy Orton a special attraction. Not now, but like 5 or 6 years ago.
No, but Roman and the company, because this is also, I think, a little bit of the company, to be honest with you, not just Roman. I think this is also WWE. Are looking at Rock, big action star. John Cena caught fire. Did it without their help. Did it in spite of them, to be honest with you. They want their own John Cena. They want that.
But Jason Momoa's already acting.
I agree, and Jason Momoa's a far better actor than Roman.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt about that. He can do comedy. He can do action. Roman looks stiff on film, to be honest with you. But I mean,
I agree.
But yeah, but I think there's a little bit of corporate jealousy here. And I think it's going to be, okay, we're going to make you more special because your problem is you're not a big enough, you're too big of a star to be on television. That kind of thing, that old thinking. Because in Hollywood, when I first moved out here, it was, oh, he's a TV guy. He's not a film guy. He's a TV guy. And that was looked at as lesser. But yep. Now all the better work, all the better craftsmanship is in premium television, to be honest with you. But there's still something to be said about being able to open a movie or being able to open or headline something. And I think there's a little WWE jealousy in there. And I think this is also part of it.
Yeah. I don't know that I fully buy the acting part of their explanation. I sort of think it's like the lady doth protesteth too much a little bit with he's going to go and focus on his acting. I'm like, yeah, you're going to go focus on acting class. Like he's he's far enough away from being where someone like The Rock or John Cena characterization.
He has more of an advantage than, say, you know, when the Iconics say they're going to go try acting or Brian Pillman books a indie feature or something like that. Nick Khan is very connected still in the world of entertainment. High-powered agent at CAA at one time. He knows people. They can make this run. They can try it. That's the only reason I find it a little different.
Yeah. I'm not saying he doesn't find himself in Fast and Furious 27. I just don't know that that does anything for him.
Still fast, still furious.
Furiosity.
Furiosity at the. They steal the nursing home shuttle bus, and they put nitrous in it.
The mission is someone needs to pull the plug on Vin Diesel's character.
Jason Statham's character also needs a prostate exam. Quick! Yeah. Well, if you were watching Twitter in the early morning earlier this week, interesting little thread from Kota Ibushi, New Japan star who is among the most physically talented wrestlers who has ever lived, Dave Meltzer's words, may not be long for the promotion after a Twitter tirade that include claims of everything from Yakuza involvement to sexual harassment in New Japan. Should be noticed that he is not claiming any of this happened to him, but he has his own very deep issues with the company right now. He is talking about going public to the press in Japan to expose nasty details of the company and wants his release. His issues are publicly with Kikuchi, I think that's how you say it, and who he posted a private Twitter back and forth where he talked about wanting to quit the promotion, as well as company president Takami Obari, who he never mentioned in his tweets, but is upset with feeling that the company has taken advantage of him. Gato has been trying to play peacemaker and get both sides on the same page, but Ibushi was saying that based on what he said publicly, that he doesn't think he can go back wrestling while hurt those are my notes, that he think he can go back. Most of his tweets were about them trying to force him into wrestling while hurt and also about the sexual harassment thing, but also I missed the Yakuza one, but we'll talk about that in a bit. One person with years in the industry behind the scene noted to them that if he was just criticizing management in New Japan, they could reconcile. But Ibushi broke trust and kayfabe and revealed that things that are considered firing offenses in the current industry. At press time, he was not released from his contract. He believes at this point he can't go back. His feeling was that he would have been a loyal soldier to the company if he didn't feel like he had been taken advantage of. And this is the strategy he is using for his release. Quote, I'll expose all about the former cheater's gun, already returned, and the sexually harassing bosses. From the company president's lies to his unreasonable power harassment this time, Ibushi tweeted, get prepared for this. Tospo, Tokyo Sports, the leading sports newspaper in Japan, although the power of newspaper is nothing compared to years ago, and TV Asahi too. I don't care. This is interesting for a number of reasons, and I'll tell you why. Stateside wrestling. Because number one, Ibushi was probably one of the guys, if he could come back from his injury, that AEW definitely wants for Forbidden Door. But not just that. They want him stateside working for AEW, especially with Kenny Omega, and to do a Golden Lovers thing as well. Problem is now, Ibushi may be off limits to them because of the working relationship with New Japan.
Would jeopardize New Japan. Yep.
Yeah. I think, you know what, I think Ibushi's going to hold out till they do release him. I think he's going to go to Noah or DDT, probably. I think he probably wants to stay in Japan for the most part, but I could also see him just thumbing his nose at New Japan saying, sign me AEW, I'll come work for you, and them considering it. But it's interesting. I mean, Ibushi's 40, but he's still peak physical condition for the most part. It's just he doesn't need the money. He comes from a very wealthy family, so he doesn't have to wrestle if he doesn't want to as well. So the injury stuff I understand because that's old school, man. You got to are you hurt? Are you injured type of thing. But the other things he's saying, yeah, knock me over with a feather that there's Yakuza involvement in professional wrestling or professional sports in Japan, Chris.
Yeah, you know, it's a strong allegation.
Yeah.
It strikes me as far-fetched, preposterous even, impossible to believe. And it baffles the imagination that in the 21st century, in the year of our Lord 2022, Jeff, crime still exists.
Go Google Ricky Dozan, kids. See how he passed away. Yeah. But yeah, it puts AEW in a bit of a bind because we know that they've wanted Kota Ibushi. They want him badly, especially when Omega's back. And now that kind of throws some cold water on plans if they want to keep a working relationship with New Japan, which could always fall apart because it was shaky at the beginning of AEW because of how the Bucks and Omega left the promotion. So when they were trying to get a stateside type of thing going, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting predicament for Kota Ibushi here. He could always work Impact too. Like
someone said he could always go back to WWE. I'm like, that ain't happening, dude. The way they treated the way they treat non-American talent, why the hell would you ever want to go there unless they paid you Nakamura money, you know, to surf or something like that.
What if he was just curious about what ridiculous name he might get when he comes in?
The second place or Cruiserweight Classic winner. Oh God. I don't even want to think of the names they could give him. Quite frankly, they'd probably name him Yakuza. Other interesting off the field notes, if you will, Brett Weiss, the general manager at TNT, TBS and True TV, has been ousted from his role after 14 years. Weiss was credited for launching Snowpiercer, Chad, AEW, Impractical Jokers, and the revival of Wipeout on the networks. Now, it's intriguing to me because Discovery is and we've talked about this the last couple of weeks, they are a notoriously cheap company. They want to do things, they want to cut budgets, they want to cut things. And there might be a thing where, look, hockey is not popular in the United States. I don't think it ever will be, but it's more of a legitimate sports destination in the public's mind than professional wrestling is. They're going to overpay for the NBA because the NBA gets them killer ratings. AEW gets them good ratings, but so did Nitro when it was on TNT. I look, if you, I don't know if they have anybody defending wrestling in the boardroom there, but I know they just lost an ally.
Yeah. It is one of those things that people have to keep an eye on, because they could lose their TV deal with TNT.
And we know they want more money. We know they want we know they're going to want to bump and pay for the rights to them, because they could probably shop themselves to some other content providers.
They certainly could shop themselves. I mean, it might not be the end of the world for AEW, but no. To your point, it might make it that much harder to continue the relationship with TNT.
On a lighter note, Orange Cassidy, Chuck Taylor, and Chris Statlander will appear on the upcoming season of the celebrity game show The Floor is Lava on Netflix. It's a game show where celebrities pretend the floor or ground is made of lava and thus must avoid touching it, or they are considered dead.
It's actually a perfect vehicle for them. Yeah, it is.
It's actually, and it's not bad publicity, to be honest with you. And Suckers and Their Money Are Soon Parted. Fightful Select reporting 2 weeks ago that the Authors of Pain are planning a return to the ring. But not only that, we found out now the duo are launching their own promotion June 4th at the Motorpoint Arena in Nottingham Arena, to be shown on Fight. Actually, I think that's supposed to be Nottingham, England. Get an editor, Dave. Or Jeff, even. Paul Ellering scheduled to appear. But yes, when in doubt, just launch your own indie show. Why not? Your own promotion. I don't know if they have a mind for the business. I think Ellering probably does. But we'll see.
Yeah, I'll wait to see if this becomes anything to comment on.
In other personnel news, Charlotte taking some time off after Backlash, it was written off as an injury, but I believe she and one El Andre El Idolo will be getting hitched during this time. Mazel, mazel, good things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jonah Rock done with Impact, but coming into Impact, your new tag team champions. I was going to save this for Lazy River, but I'll say it now. The Briscoe brothers are now in Impact. Them boys winning the tag team titles over the weekend. Always happy to see them get work. I love the Briscoes are the second best tag team working today after FDR. So
yeah, I like the Briscoes. I'm with you.
Sign them, Tony. Freaking sign them. I don't. But you know, we talked about that before. But
I know Jay Briscoe and Adam Page is an immediately intriguing angle.
Jay Briscoe talking is an immediately to me. I mean, they just cut the best promos in the business because Mark's goofiness offsets Jay's homicidal tendencies when he's cutting a promo. So it just makes a nice yin and yang there. But that's it for the news desk. Gonna close that up. Go on to the Lazy River of Wrestling Criticism, whatever we watched this weekend, whatever comes to mind. And as usual, if there's a pay-per-view before, we do the preview. If it's after, we do ice cold takes. And WWE WrestleMania Backlash ran this past Sunday. Look, the WWE does crappy builds, but the wrestling on this show was quite good, Chris. I don't know if you got to catch any of this, but especially the opener between Cody and Seth Rollins. And yes, even the Ronda Charlotte match, which was mean girls match, I thought over-delivered. I thought the six-man tag was pretty damn good as well. And even the other matches, with the exception of the almost Bobby Lashley one, but you know, we're pretty good. AJ and Edge were pretty good, I thought. Oh, take your victory lap now, Chris, because you called it exactly as it went down. Rhea Ripley unmasking as someone, because of course Damian Priest going to be at ringside, joined Judgment Day.
Yep, and then they explained why she joined Judgment Day, and it's exactly what you'd think it was.
And every one of you fans never believed in me.
It's true. If they believed in her more, they would have won the tag team titles, dude. Think like, you know, it's that six man effect that the fans have not been bringing to this atmosphere here.
But that brings me into the general notes on WWE television this week, because The wrestling, there was some good wrestling on this. The RK-Bro versus the Street Profits, damn good match. The there's a match on SmackDown tonight. I can't remember what it was, but it was very good. I just watched the damn thing. I can't remember what happened an hour ago, Chris. This is sad. You know, the women's tag was like, oh, it was Ronda Rousey came out for an open challenge, and Raquel, now Rodriguez, answered, and that was a solid match. That was some Vader versus Ken Shamrock type of stuff there, with Ronda playing, you know, playing a monster heel to Ronda, and it even though she was a babyface, and they shook hands and did the thing afterward, but that match was better than it had any right to be. The problem is
that outside of that one match on Raw, and I'll even spot them Cody in theory, there's nothing else on Raw worth watching, and it's a 3-hour program.
No, because the storytelling stinks. I mean, we're now going back to the unification of the tag titles, that story again, which will supposedly be settled next week on SmackDown. Lacey Evans, all these weeks of vignettes, all these weeks of events telling her struggles and her hard luck story and her pulling herself up by the bootstraps and being a single mom and you know, she born in poverty and her dad was an abusive drug user. Chris, all that was done as an elaborate swerve to bring her back as heel, because she's now listed on the Raw roster as a heel. And on last week's SmackDown, I missed this point because I was just so tuned out. They did the Lacey Evans demands you stand and give her respect. What in the blue hell? Like, you finally found a story close to true life that people can get behind in some ways, and you start to build it and build it and build it in service of, and apparently this was the plan the entire time, to say F off for your investment, emotional investment in this story.
Yeah, there was that other weird line from Graves on commentary on Raw where he was like, it may all seem sensational, but it's true. And I thought that was strange. And I really found myself racking my brain as to where is the heel heat for this supposed to come from? Is it just that this person is telling this hard luck sob story, woe is me, and like we're mad at them because they're pleading poverty and pleading charity and
you
like
stupid poors.
wait, you guys thought I was a poor like one of you? No way, I'm not stupid enough to have a dad who does drugs. That's you guys.
That's you people. No, but it makes a little sense that maybe Corey was implying that she made all of this up. And I'm just like, if they did this to her as a rib or something, I'm flabbergasted, because it's like, okay, this is the kind of story they should be telling occasionally with people and not make it, you know, too saccharine. But hey, make it a driving force and have people get behind someone like this. But instead, Vince just looks at it. You were born poor. Why didn't you just leave the womb and go move into a mother who was middle class, who could have raised you better? I'm flabbergasted by this, Chris. Please vamp on something.
It really baffles my mind where the heel heat is supposed to come from.
You see, she's likable, and we can't have likable superstars. Turn them immediately heel.
I just, like, are we supposed to hate this person, Jeff?
Such contempt for the audience. People are cheering this? No, she's to be scorned because she's white trash.
The problem is she had to work to achieve. She should have just been born on third base.
She should have had her father give her a territory, and then she could have played up the trailer park stuff in a Playboy interview or something. I rewatched that whole statement. I went, they did what? It was right after the last story. It's like, please stand and give her the respect that she deserves. And I'm like, I'd be anybody with an IQ over 50 has to be confused by this.
Yeah, like, and then you go, "What should I stand?" Because, like,
Because, like, problem is each and every one of you. Oh my God, they're gonna run that phrase into the ground. It's like there's nothing wrong with having likable baby faces. Now you can't make them stupid all the time, but you know,
like they even sort of get how to do this with a character like Randy Orton, where he's a baby face and he's likable and he's not stupid.
Oh, he'll be a jerk soon enough. Well, no, what they do with everybody.
Well, he's gonna turn. I mean, he obviously has to turn heel on Riddle eventually. That's just like where the let's turn
Riddle heel on him. They're gonna have Riddle steal his entire moveset, and they're gonna have Riddle Bride turn on him.
I'd almost like that.
Because that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense, but yeah, whatever. Only because I want to see Riddle be heel. I actually think Orton's better as a babyface at this point in his career.
He's actually having fun. We were talking about this also before the show. Randy Orton, this is the most I've liked him watching him. And because he just seems like he's having fun doing whatever.
It's the most I've liked him in 10 years.
Oh, yeah, at least.
Yeah, yeah, it's been, you're right. It might be more than 10 years. Huh.
Your turn on this lazy river.
Oh man. Okay. Let us swing it over to Dynamite.
Okay.
I like. Oh, okay. Tony Nese, Danhausen. I really enjoyed the inversion of expectations.
Yes.
Like with the entrance that Danhausen gets. You see Nese in the ring. I'm sitting there going like, really? They're going to feed Nese to Danhausen, and like Danhausen's coming to the ring and it looks like it's going to be a match, an AEW debut match, not a squash match, but Danhausen's going to prevail over Tony Nese and we're going to get the debut of Danhausen.
And we'll get a beat down afterwards for the Heat and Elite. Yeah. Yeah.
And instead we went the way it needed to go, where Tony Nese completely annihilates Danhausen.
It's a six-star match. Six-star match right there, baby.
Danhausen does not need to win much. Like, he needs to occasionally hit people with that curse just to get the curse over. But it should never be, like, in any real threat of actually beating real people. It should just, like, you know, be used against the, JD Drakes of the world. That's the guy's name?
Yeah. How about Hook and JD Drake had a fun little match.
Yeah, and then Hook came out and Danhausen shook hands. It was to your point, it's almost the opposite. So instead of the babyface Danhausen winning and then Tony Nese getting his heat back, you have Nese winning and then Danhausen gets his heat back because he gets the handshake from Hook, which is really what his whole quest has been about anyways.
Yeah, and that got a big pop in the audience. I mean, even the announcers went, whoa, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I actually thought that this whole scene was played out really well.
I thought not only that, but this will also get into my next point, but the fact that Danhausen's curse on Nese was interrupted and then put on Mark Sterling and then paid off later in the Wardlow bit, which now we get into that. That was awesome. All of it. The Dark Side of the Ring parody, which was pitch perfect. Jericho asking how much he's getting paid to talk about MJF. Taz doing the I can't, over emotional, I can't handle this, I have to leave.
Yeah, no, and like having Jake Roberts in there too.
Barry Horowitz,
take it from me, a top guy. Yeah, like that guy's a jobber. Like, great stuff.
The contract signing. Yeah, you have these dopey security guys who are all trainees at wrestling schools, of course, but taking off the handcuffs, and God bless prop comedy. Sometimes it goes wrong. They couldn't get that second handcuff off for a while. I was a little worried they're gonna say, okay, run with it, and then he's gonna punch somebody and
no, that's always a juice job. Yeah, you can't just leave that cuff on.
Yeah, but you know what, it was fun, it was what it needed to be. Wardlow has some great reactions. Just his cocky just arrogance, you know, just knowing that he could overpower people at any time is so fantastic. That look, I look, this MJF thing is getting over with me a lot, and it's going to get Wardlow over. Like I said, the danger is going to be the first program they put Wardlow in after this MJF program.
Yes, that has to be handled very well. But like, no, Wardlow is very much back on track. I think even the usage of Long Island with MJF, like it's yes. Nice to have MJF Island. It's funny.
Just the one place, you know, they try to do this with Britt, but it doesn't work with Britt because.
No, but it's just so great with MJF where it's like it's the mirror universe where Bizarro World where MJF is like the greatest guy of all time. And he comes out and plays it like he's a baby yes. face. The best thing that happened there was Tony Schiavone like had that yes, incredulous, yes. disgusted line of like, he'd stab them all in the back in a second. Hi, I can't believe he's doing this. Like, that was so great.
Yes,
Tony Schiavone's so good in this
role. Schiavone's disgust at certain people, whether it's Adam yes. Cole or MJF. It's just with Adam Cole, he has that ulterior motive, which makes it slightly creepy at the same time, but it still works. Every time where he's like, here's my friend, Britt Baker, that nasty Adam Cole. That kind of thing. But also, you know, going into that, it played into the Punk thing as well. Punk wearing the Tavares jersey. And you may not have gotten this level of subtext, but I believe his name is Brad Tavares. Team captain for the New York Islanders. Demanded to be traded, got traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs, and is having a killer season, and it's just it's rubbed a lot. So Punk is, oh look, I'm looking to make this up to you. I'm looking to make this up to you. Turns around, he's a heel this week, and after healing up Adam Page last week, I loved that confrontation.
That confrontation was super cleverly done by Punk because it still played into the fact that in Long Island, Punk is a heel. But when they go to Chicago and when this whole thing ends, it's going to be Paige who's the heel.
Vegas.
It goes to Vegas. I thought this was going to Chicago. At some
point. There's a double or nothing in 2 weeks.
When does it go? When are they going to Chicago? Didn't Paige say Chicago?
No, they're going to Houston next week.
Oh, I could have sworn they were going to Punk's. Like the way, I guess the impression I got from that promo was that they're going to Punk's hometown. But anyways, he's going to be.
They will.
I don't know. Apparently, I don't know much. Whatever. dude, you know.
No, it's fine.
Towns are hard. There's a lot of them, and they're all over the country. So I think that like it was well done in the sense that it turned Punk back babyface, and it sort of I think foreshadows where this is going to go, where Paige is going to win. He's going to level Punk at the end of the match, and he's going to like shake his limp hand.
Oh, I think there's a possibility that Punk actually gives into heelish things, and he's a little older, and he pulls a little cheaty thing to try and get the belt type of thing. I don't think it's a full turn, but I think there's a possibility that's a start of a turn. But that's interesting. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. I don't know. It sure just seems to me like right now, Punk, it seems like, is playing within the limits of being a babyface, and it's Paige who's being a dick here. And like Paige was being a dick after the match. Like he didn't really care about Silver's well-being, for example. He's like kind of going back to being bad friend Adam Page. I don't know. I think it's Page who's the one who's turning heel here.
No, that's fine too. I can handle that. I like the mystery, to be honest with you. I hope next week we have a mic battle between the two of them.
Yeah, yeah. Regardless, I think the one thing we can both agree on is that it's picking up steam. Like this is a program that's doing well.
It has my interest.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm looking forward to this match, and I really liked the deployment of the Buckshot Lariat this week as the finish of the match. Even if it wasn't the greatest Buckshot Lariat you ever saw.
We can go back to Dynamite in a second. I'm gonna make a quick detour because I'm gonna give a shout out to someone from AEW Dark. Vicky Dreamboat. Well, faced Abaddon on this week's AEW Dark. It looks like Abaddon's getting a couple of matches here and there. I expect her to probably be put over on the Ring of Honor roster. But the reason I'm shouting out Vicky Dreamboat is because Vicky Dreamboat is a member of the improv community. And this was fascinating to me. I didn't know who this was. So I'm watching an interview and she goes, oh yeah, you know, I trained improv for a number of years, blah, 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 blah. So old Jeff Hawkins slipped into the DMs and had a discussion about improv with her. And she is out of Seattle's Jet City Improv, where we have a lot of friends. And she and her fiance have now moved to Jacksonville and are going to open an improv theater over there. So it was a cool little chat about prov and nothing too deep, but just kind of congratulating her and stuff like that. I thought that was kind of cool.
Cool.
Your next move here.
My next move here, this Jeff Hardy and Darby Allin match. So yes. Jeff Hardy has been having a bunch of stinkers. And here's what I'll say about this match. It wasn't a stinker. It was insane. For the type of match it was, it took way too many risks. And the ladder and chairs spot that they did was that baffled me.
Let me ask you something, because sure. I loved this match until I started talking about it on the Dynamite show, which you can hear every week on Fight Game Media. Patreon.com/Fight Game Media. Anyways, but my co-host there said something that made me feel guilty. And he said, yeah, I was enjoying that too, but I think it's in bad taste to do that in front of Owen Hart's widow, given how Owen Hart died. And you're trying to kill yourself in front of his widow. And I'm just like,
and the story is, yeah. I want this match to be more extreme.
Yeah. And then I started to feel guilty about it. And I think he has a point. And I think this should have been thought through a little bit better.
Yeah. I think that that's not an invalid point. I don't know. Maybe it's not as fully resonant to me as just the idea that, like, Jeff Hardy at his advanced age needs to stop having crazy matches like this that yeah. have this is fine for a pay-per-view, right? But like, this is on weekly television and he's doing these insane bumps.
Moves like the coffin drop, and it's like, okay, hopefully they talked to her before the match and got approval, hey, you can do whatever you want type of thing. But it, as I started to think about it more and more, I got more and more uncomfortable with the amount of damage both guys did and the amount of risk that was unnecessary.
Yeah, I just worry that, like, Jeff Hardy's career is literally going to end on television where we see that he can't walk again.
Yeah,
you know, he takes a stupid bump, he accordions on the floor, and all of a sudden he's just not moving.
Yeah. That's my fear of Big E comes back, too. You know. Darby Allin's basically wrestling his future self right there too, and you're just like, dude, look at him, man, you don't end up like this. But that bump onto the chairs, that he got part of Jeff on there, but that was mostly legs hitting chairs, and I assume he's very sore. But let's talk a little bit about this Owen tournament a little bit, because you know who's having a hell of a year, Chris, is one Dax Harwood. Because that was it was to quote Adam Page, it was a Bret Hart masturbatory tribute match. It was very HBK Bret Hart in terms of a lot of the moves and mannerisms there. But man, that's the most fun I've had in an Adam Cole match in a long time. I adored the blocked Panama Sunset into roll through into a pile driver. I loved that it did not end on Adam Cole's finisher, but it ended on a sharpshooter instead. I really liked this match a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I liked this match a lot. Dax Harwood, I'm with you, really starting to stand out as like a very nice singles talent who's able to get the best out of the other guy in the ring because they're able to have a creative, interactive match with one another.
Yeah, it was very old school. It was very chop heavy. It was very wear a guy down as opposed to do a lot of moves, which I appreciated. I wasn't going to go to a non sequitur, but I do want to go back to the Owen bracket because I had an odd idea for the Joker on the men's side. On the women's side, I think it's probably going to be Athena/Ember Moon because it is in Houston.
Mm.
But I thought of a pick that wasn't on the board that I think would be cool. if only for a very short run. And there's a wrestler out there, Chris, that has been a tag team partner of Owen Hart and has been an opponent of Owen Hart that is still active in the ring and can still go to a moderate pace.
Ken Shamrock?
No, I was thinking Too Cold Scorpio.
Oh, okay.
Too Cold Scorpio teamed with Owen in New Japan in 91. And then in the late 80s, in the late 90s, 97, 98 period, when he was Flash Funk / Scorpio / part of the Job Squad, he had a few matches in there with Owen Hart. I was like, that would be a nice little tribute right there. First match with Joe. Could get some moves in. Maybe the Ring of Honor crew ends up costing Joe the match and he can have a match with Phoenix and Phoenix could beat him. And I think that would be perfectly appropriate. But I think anybody they get is probably going to be pretty good in this.
Yeah, no, I hadn't had any strong thoughts as to who the Joker's going to end up being here.
Like, I thought Christian might be a possibility due to the Canadian / trainer type of connection. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's plenty of good ideas. I mean, you could say Cesaro, but I don't think there's any chance they work with Cesaro. They didn't have interest in Cesaro before for some reason.
That's crazy to me still.
It's a little crazy, but I think it's also we've taken up enough ex-WWE people and also he was using them for leverage at the time in a negotiation against WWE. That might have been frowned upon.
Maybe so. I just think, I mean, he's sneaky big. So on this roster, I think he'd really stand out as a big dominant heel.
Yeah. I think it's not going to be a superstar, but I think it's going to be a name person. It's nice to be surprised occasionally. I'm happy that it has not yet been spoiled.
Well, I'm going to put Cesaro up in the air then. I'm going to go for it.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Your turn, sir.
There is nothing that gets me more excited every week than NXT, and this week was no exception. Geez. Jeffrey Hawkins.
I have quit. Let me tell you what. Officially after this week, I can't watch this thing. This thing, look, it was a great idea to have a mostly women's show. If you have a roster that can handle it.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth?
I mean, because after that opener.
That opener was fine. It was an NXT special, but like, yeah. it was good.
And Roxanne work well together.
They work well together, and Roxanne's like, she's nice. She's a real nice talent. Fallon Henley and Sloan Jacobs is where this starts falling off. I'm just gonna do this. This is my segment here. That's where this starts falling off. The Tony D'Angelo and Legado del Fantasma storyline is like the most predictable mafia war storyline you've ever heard of. Like, but I mean, it made me laugh that Cruz del Toro volunteered to go off by himself to go start the car, that he didn't even take Joaquin Wilde with him. He just was like, this seems like a good idea to me, as they're gloating about how they were able to pick off AJ Galante last week because he was by himself. Like,
what is with the kidnapping?
The kidnapping.
It's their only move. It's like the number of people.
That's how you get whacked in NXT.
With no repercussions at all, ever.
Yeah, normally you throw someone in the trunk after something bad happens to them, whereas this is just like get in the trunk. Like, it's so weird.
Well, it is Tuesday.
Yeah, gotta get in the trunk. Alba Fire's a fine name. The Amari Miller match went on longer than it really needed to.
Agreed.
Lastly, look, I think Andre Chase is actually a good little gimmick. I really do.
That was fun. The
backstage thing. Yes. My favorite line is the glee that Andre has and the pride that he has when he discovers that Chase University has a foreign language department. like he discovered, he's like, we have a foreign language department. Like this kicks ass is like the tone of his voice. It's so great.
I love the kid, dude. He is out kicking his coverage with this, and it's great. I mean, the look when his sweater was blue coming out. Good comedy. it was, you know, and of course, Bodie with the pigtails. Just the hell with it. I'm digging it. It's going with it. What did you think of Cora Jade and Natty?
I mean, I don't hate having Natty prevail over Cora Jade and have this be Cora Jade's hill to climb. Like, I mean, this really needs, in order for this to work, it needs a rematch. I'm not going to say, let's just see where this goes. I'm going to say that in order for this to be a satisfactory thing to have done, Cora Jade needs to have a rematch with Natalya, where this time she's able to see through all the tricks and she's wiser.
The handshake was a bit much.
Yeah, no joke.
You know, the show of respect afterwards, after taking the shortcuts.
Yeah, I mean, that was the part that was baffling.
Ballsy. It's like, yeah, I cheated, but hey, good game.
Like, I guess you just got outplayed, but no, I mean, the handshake never should have happened, but... yeah. This show sucks. Like,
I may start watching Impact every week.
It really is a thing where if I didn't need to make sure when I got to the mic here, I knew what I was talking about with the state of professional wrestling at least half as well as I presently do, I would not want, because like Nikita Lyons stinks.
Yes.
This Ariana Grace is infinitely more interesting than Nikita Lyons or Lash Legend. Like, and they won't push her anywhere near as much.
No.
I saw a lot more out of Ariana Grace than I saw out of any of them. They're not going to do anything with that. The match style of this NXT, just it is crappy WWE training.
Yeah, it's the WWE match. WWE. That's my problem with it. It's like there's nothing interesting about it.
There's nothing unique about it.
The Briscoes are on Impact. I'm going to watch Impact, and I think I've, you know, since I've kind of, I haven't seen the Loser Leaves NXT UK match yet, but I heard it was pretty good. But I've kind of fallen on the wayside of NXT UK. I may just start watching Impact as opposed to either of the NXT shows, because they have good rosters. It's just I find their presentation derivative. It's a WWE show done for fewer people as well, but it's higher quality people doing the script. So it's, you know, you have the same problem. It's just a different problem in some ways.
Yeah. Bring it back to Dynamite.
Yeah, I was going to do that too. So go ahead.
Okay. Ricky Starks and Jungle Boy.
This is where I was going to go. So
okay, yes. Go for it. You go cool. For it then.
Liked the match overall. Loved Ricky Starks's facials when he was in the, in that submission.
Oh, the snare trap. Yes.
Snare trap.
Yes. That really helped get over the fact that the snare trap is a credible threat.
His eyes are bulging out. He's panicking.
His resolve is breaking. No, like there was a moment of resolve breaking. I liked that a lot.
But this angle and the way that Jungle Boy lost, a little too cute by half. I mean,
right. There were too many moves. It was a bit of a Rube Goldberg machine there at the end with all the different tag teams.
So Swerve comes out. And, oh my God. Oh my God. I can't believe you lost after this. Jungle Boy is turned to the referee, who is just being a moron. He gets hit in the ropes and then rolled up and then gets hit with the finisher. It's not even like a solid shot. It's just a glancing blow on the ropes. And they have to put over, oh, he may have hit his neck on the ropes, blah, 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 and then gets pinned. So he looks like a geek, and he's sulking.
And he's sulking after getting the visual cover on Ricky Starks during the match, which is also relevant to the way Christian reacts to all of this.
Yes. And now we have way too many things going on, because we have Swerve, who looks like he's going to join Team Taz, I think, because I think this is all a bit of a ruse. To be honest with you, you have Starks and Hobbs out there, you know, doing what Hobbs and Starks do. You have Christian glaring at Jungle Boy way too long. And then you have Keith Lee kind of shuffling down, taking his time, you know, because he has to wait for his music to hit to come running down to the ring. And I think we've basically just shifted the triple threat we thought we were going to get for another triple threat, because I think we thought we were going to get Bucks, Red Dragon, and Jurassic Express. And I think instead we're going to get Team Taz, Jurassic Express, and Swerve and Keith Lee.
Yeah. Which will be interesting. I mean, I think maybe that will postpone.
But they've decided to rush this entire thing to get there.
Yes, this angle really was sort of like let's get there kind of quickly. It was interesting to have Jungle Boy going for the FTW title with little fanfare.
Yeah. Yeah, I have nothing else on my Lazy River list, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I don't know that I do either. We don't really watch SmackDown.
I watched SmackDown tonight.
Okay, what'd you think of it?
Like I said, I liked the Raquel Ronda match.
Okay.
I'm frustrated that we're going back to the well on the unification with the tag title thing. But, you know, I mean, the Usos and Roman cut a pretty good promo. Sami Zayn kind of playing, how I put it is, playing the Dennis Hopper character to Marlon Brando's Colonel Kurtz in Apocalypse Now is kind of cool. where he's making, like, he made a match basically with Riddle, whereas if Riddle won, they'd get the unification match without permission, and Roman Reigns endorsed it, and of course they did. You know, it was an okay show. It's missing some things. It feels like they haven't really gone anywhere. There was a decent women's tag match between Natty and Shayna versus Naomi and Sasha, but Sasha feels like a second wheel in the tag team thing, and she's probably the biggest star they have, which is weird to me. You know, I mean, WWE was kind of, you know, there are things that happened that they just weren't necessarily interesting. I thought, like, Alexa Bliss coming back, but she's still kind of half doing the crazy girl and half doing the goddess thing. And I don't think that's going to work at all. And, you know, I like Sonya getting fired because thank God we're not going to have another heel manager type of or heel thing. But, WWE doesn't. They don't get too emotional in their programs. They don't get too much heat in their programs. It's just these guys are fighting right now because, oh, they ran into each other backstage and now they're feuding. So you can't really get, and the promos don't hit because they're all exposition-y. Pat McAfee is just a loose cannon all over the place, which makes the show fun to watch because you don't know what he's going to say. Like on Backlash this week, on Backlash, there's a guy in a Fiend mask. He goes, "Is that the Fiend?" And you can just hear the silence for a moment. It's like, "Patty no longer works for this company." Good. That kind of thing. Like Pat's just going to go off on the fly and do what Pat does because he doesn't need the money and he doesn't need the job. So it's still a fun watch, but it's not an interesting watch in some ways.
Yeah.
Like Becky Lynch, I don't know what the hell, what kind of performance art she's trying to do. Her and Seth are still in a contest to see who can have the wackier costume, I think. But I don't like this Becky. But Becky and Asuka at the same time are magic because Asuka's just crazy. And I love crazy Asuka. But she's having a blast doing whatever the hell she thinks she's doing. And Becky's just angry at it, which makes a good straight absurd scene for me. But at the same time, you know, Becky looking like Lady Gaga / lead singer of Paramore, whatever she's trying to do here, it's not an interesting character to me, to be honest with you. It's just Becky out of her element because she should be a babyface.
Yeah, I concur. All right, cool. Let's go for the wrap then.
Let's close it there then. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at DWATG. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. We are part of the Voices Wrestling Podcasting Network. Shows for any kind of fandom you want. They have an AEW show called The Next Pillar now. It goes far more granular into AEW than we do. Also have Music of the Mat with our boy Andrew Rich. Five-star Mac game with the match game with the best, Joe Gagne, or Joe Gagne, I think is how he says it. I call him Gagne because of, you know, Greg Gagne. And of course, the flagship with Rich and Joe going through all the news of the week as well. Listen to my other show every Wednesday, usually drops about an hour and a half after Dynamite finishes, called The Dynamite Show. It's on Fight Game Media, patreon.com/fightgamemedia for $5 a month. More audio by me, more granular going over of Dynamite so that I don't repeat myself on here. Chris also does podcasts, but they're more of the political variety.
Yeah, Don't Worry About the Government just dropped a new episode this week. You can find it over at patreon.com/DWATG. It will be available on iTunes and Stitcher and Spotify later on, I don't know, sometime early next week here. We went into, obviously, the impending Roe versus Wade thing. And a number of other interesting topics, including what has changed in American conservatism over the last 30 years. What is the key thing that I have observed that, and my guest Sean has observed? An interesting conversation on that. You can hear all about it over at patreon.com/DWATG.